Welcome to the 145 Rural Podcast, where we are here to strengthen music careers and communities one song at a time. And now, here's your host, Jacob Wing. Yay!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to today's episode. And I am incredibly lucky to have Mike Johnson with me. Thank you so much, sir, for taking the time to sit down.
My pleasure.
Let us pick your brain.
Yeah, I don't know about luck, but whatever. It's all good.
It's all about how you look at it.
Cool. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, let's get right into it. You've been playing music for a bit now, and you've got an album out, and you're working on another one.
Yeah.
So let's talk about you and how you got your start. What started getting you into playing music and getting out there and doing the thing?
As far as like getting out, that sort of happened later in life. I did sing a lot as a kid. I sang in some bands in college, but I was more of a singer, even though I was always playing guitar. But I mean, I got my start singing in the back of my mom's station wagon, you know, singing to AM radio. I'm older.
I'm old.
But I'm Generation X.
Yep.
I mess around. Anyway, but yeah, so like that part of it, I've always been doing. My performance life, though, performance art, like being in front of crowds, really came from sports announcing. Yeah, I promoted professional strongman events like at the Arnold Classic and at the Mr. Olympia. So I've been on stage like, make some noise, Columbus, you know, and that kind of thing. So
what a journey.
That was like the real, but I've always had music in the background. I've always played music. I've always wanted to play music. I played for my kids. We would play and sing, doing, you know, a little campfire thing.
Right.
But as far as like playing and singing, as outgoing as I would be, I never would play and sing really in front of like large groups of people. And a friend of mine, Lindsay, she lives in South Bend, Indiana. She kind of tricked me into playing guitar and singing one night with her and another guy. And we ended up doing, what's this, a Plush.
Oh, Stone Pilots.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. So I learned all the chords and I was just going to get up there and sort of fill in. They're like, oh, you're going to play and sing. And I was like, okay. And then there's an amazing, amazing place out in Fresno, California called Starving Artists Bistro.
Okay.
And this guy, Bob, runs it. And he has, it's open mic all the time. So I really started to hone my craft as far as playing and singing and screwing songs up really bad there, because it was always open mic. And you could get up and do like a half hour set, you know?
Right.
And then, you know, in my 50s, I started writing my own music and I fell in love with it. And I've been performing my own music and other covers ever since. And it's because my musical journey spans many decades. I know covers, like everything from stuff from like the 50s and 60s to 70s rock.
Everybody happy.
Like, yeah, I can, you know, grandma be out there dancing and even, you know, so yeah.
Well, let's talk about that. It's like a lot of people, especially when you get later in life, that could be a real hindrance to, you know, I'm too late in life. I don't want to get out there and do that. That's a young man's game. Can you talk about that? Have you had any kind of, you know, hurdles that have stopped you or anything like that?
No. Especially, I mean, probably COVID stopped everybody,
of course,
you know,
of course,
for a minute. But I was recording music during COVID, so like it was good for me.
The perfect little stop where you could, yeah, okay.
Exactly. So no, I have not had hurdles. In fact, I think there's more venues right now. I was playing a gig up in Helena and I met a union guy, a music union guy.
Right.
And he was saying that right now there are more venues that are looking for singles and doubles, you know, two guitar players,
right,
guitar player, singer, than even full bands right now. So older musicians tend to singer-songwriter genre, maybe just like one guy in a guitar country, maybe like a you know, a duet thing. I think it's easier almost to find gigs. And then, you know, I mean, the bottom line too is if you show up not drunk and high and you're a little bit responsible, maybe, not that all old people are responsible.
right.
Sometimes you get some old hammerheads, but you know, you get out there, you put on a good show, you kind of read the audience, you might have a more expansive catalog of music to draw from. So I think really if you're an older player and you're sitting around the house doing it, I think getting out in doing it now, there's more opportunity than there's ever been. I mean, there's a brewery or a winery or something on every freaking corner, right? And everybody wants, everybody has a stool in the corner and they want live music.
Oh, that's so great advice. And I hope anybody that would be hearing this, that that might push you over that edge, please just get out there, whatever
it
takes.
Yeah, just do it.
Let's talk about, what were your influence? What musical influences have you had?
So my mom and dad, two kind of divergent influences. My old man listened to Johnny Cash and like Chuck Berry and Buddy Holly. So,
oh, good stuff.
You know, that early. But sometime in the 60s, I don't know, maybe 65, 66. I don't know the exact date, but he went to the Newport Jazz Festival. I'm from the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And he saw your boy, this guy right here. Oh, oh, guitar cases on it. Mississippi John Hurt. That's crazy that you had that. My old man saw Mississippi John Hurt.
Just unbelievable.
And he just bought all the albums. We used to listen to albums. And a guy called Lead Belly.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And so I grew up listening to blues. And then my mom listened to like Kris Kristofferson, singer-songwriter stuff.
Cool.
But she also listened to jazz. Like,
so you got a little bit of everything.
Like, yeah, so I had this wide variety of music that I was familiar with. And of course, like, you know, my first band love was Kiss, of course. Oh, Kiss Army, and then my buddy Gino Battistini, we went to his house after school one day. His brother Tommy, you know, can we swear? He was like,
oh yeah,
this Kiss is bullshit, what the fuck. Listen to this. He throws on an album and it's Into the Void.
Oh,
fucking Masters of Reality.
Oh, boy.
I was just like, I'm not worthy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was, so I was really a metalhead, but I couldn't sing it in high school. I couldn't play it. And, you know, by the time grunge came around, I was already in the Marine Corps. So.
Oh, geez.
But really, blues. Blues is like my love. I'm a blues singer all day long. I'm not a shredder, unfortunately. I wish I was, but I can sing some blues.
Oh, yes, you can. That is fantastic. So when did you decide that you were ready to get your first recording? You know, you start writing songs. When were you ready to start recording?
That's crazy. An old friend of a friend of mine, Rachel, she sent me a picture from like 7 or 8 years earlier, like a flip phone picture of literally like the lake over or the sun over Lake Tahoe.
Okay.
And she sent that picture and I wrote. Now, I had been playing at Starving Artist Bistro for a couple of years and kind of working on other people's music. And my son he's an artist. He's a voiceover actor. He's an actor. He's been on some TV shows and some movies, but he also plays music. So I was writing some music for him and we were writing songs together and he was writing lyrics kind of thing. But anyway, so my friend Rachel sends me this picture and it just, I had a song in 18 hours. It's Pull Over. It's on my first album.
Yeah.
And so it was COVID time and I found a place in Boise to record it. And I knew exactly what I wanted it to sound like. And I'm not even a big country fan or Americana. I mean, I like bluegrass, you know, but I wouldn't say like I'm a big, you know, fan. But that's what I wanted, an Americana feel. And it just felt right in that song. And so I laid the guitar tracks. I did the vocals. He put in some backing rhythm stuff, you know, all instruments, nothing digital. Mm-hmm. And then he knew a couple guys because nobody was working.
Right, of course.
I would say hardcore bluegrass guys, and they came in. They played fiddle and mandolin, and they came into the studio. They had already had the track, so they had worked their parts out, and they just cut it live. And I just when it was over, I went over to Nate Argenbrode, the producer, and I was like, I have 9 more songs. Let's go. I mean, I was in like, and so now it's just been like this crazy, like I'm always writing songs. I'm always pumping out music. And you know, when you're older, not that you can't be young and have a story to tell, but when you're older, it's just, it's so easy. It's just life.
Right.
You know? So.
Well, everything that he has done in that first album is linked below. Whatever you have, you're watching this, the video, it's a podcast, it's all linked below. Go take a listen to that. But also, you're working on a double album right now.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about that.
Yeah. So while I was recording the first album, I was continuing to write. Like the genie was out of the bottle. And I was writing songs. And so as a follow-up, the first album came out in 2021. And as a follow up, I was going to go to Nashville and record my second album. And it was a terrible experience. The musicians were great, yeah, but it just wasn't my music anymore. And so I had all that music, like a whole other album, and I was still writing and cranking out stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I chanced into 12th Fret in Boise. It's this incredible music store in Boise, Idaho. And there was this young sales guy, and I was trying to get an amp. I was trying to get a better tone. Right. I ended up buying like a 1980s twin reverb. Oh, cool. Jealous. And yeah, it's pretty sick. It's thing weighs a ton. It's wicked heavy. But anyway, I brought my guitar in there, and he was, you know, and I was like, well, you know, I was playing through it, and he was adjusting it. It's got to sound really good. And I was like, well, here, you play a little bit. So he starts playing, and I was just like, holy crap. So I said, hey, can you get me like a big body jumbo guitar, the biggest one you have? And I played a couple of my songs, and he just riffed on them. And I was like, all right. And then I kind of didn't catch up with him for like a year. And then there was a studio open down there. A guy named Andrew Masters has a studio called Hinge. And it's really more of a labor of love as opposed to like, it's a working studio, but he's got a Neve board.
That's unbelievable.
It's like only one of two like working Neve boards.
And there's a couple of videos of what you guys did there on his Instagram if you want to see that. But
it's insane. And so we've been working on this project for a while now, but I just keep writing songs, and Benji's like, that's enough, no more. And interestingly though, he listened to my music and he fell in love with a song that you were listening to earlier today called Maybe It's the One.
Oh, it's a great song.
And he wanted to cover that one. So there's a bunch of new music. There's a song is on the end of the first album called Rainbow's End that when I was in the studio the first time, other than that first song, I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I didn't even know what I wanted the music to sound like, because I just came up, you know, on the acoustic guitar and the vocals. So the producer really helped me. Nate, the producer, really helped. The second time around, and now certainly, I'm writing songs and I'm already thinking of all the instrumentation and what music could go in there and where I want the pauses. So it's really just been this learning curve. But I think the more you write and the more you play with other people, like the more ideas you get.
Yeah.
And so,
ain't that the truth?
I can play any of my music acoustically and just sing it. You know, that's it. Me and a guitar and a stool, and let's just do this thing. But you start adding on layers of other musicians. So you've told the story and they're just adding flavor to the story. And you just get this big sauce of music, and it's like a big pot, a big stew of music with other, you know, people adding in. And it's just, it's killer, you know? So that's kind of like this like weird sort of journey that I've been on. And I just, you know, I can't stop. Being in the studio is great.
Oh.
And live recording.
It just sounds like you took to it so quickly.
Live recording is insane.
And it's one of the hardest things. Nobody really does that anymore, but it's such a lost art, and you just stepped into it. So cool.
The energy is amazing. But even, you know, when I was singing with bands, when I was emceeing, you know, had, you know, 20,000 people in an arena and, you know, doing some strongman stuff. I mean, having some stage command is also helpful. And I always try to be with, not that it's that hard, but musicians that are way better than me.
No, it makes sense. Makes sense.
You know, because they're going to bring it up. And as long as you can kind of keep the elements. Mel Torme used to play with the Marty Paich Orchestra. And he would say one of his famous lines, and Mel Torme is this amazing singer. If you know who Mel Torme is, look him up.
Right.
He's got some videos, him doing some bebop stuff with Ella Fitzgerald. That's absolutely incredible.
Oh my goodness.
But his thing was let the band play.
Right.
So to me, I like spaces in the music for the band.
Right.
You know,
and just let it breathe. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, if you're just doing some rhythm, you just get up there and do some rhythms and just get in there and let the band have their piece, you know.
That's something that can't be taught. It's just like a natural reaction as a musician. So cool.
You know, you're feeding off the other guys, right?
Right.
Hi there, and welcome to the ad break. We're just going to take a moment to let everybody know about our community of growing members. And if you'd like to be a part of that, just look at the info below and there will be a click there for an email sign up to join in and get your voice heard. As well, if you're enjoying this content, please join our Patreon at patreon.com/145rural. There you can join any of our groups and you can add to the discussion of what topics we will choose that will help you and hopefully future members of our groups, as well as join monthly Q&As and other such benefits. Again, that's patreon.com/145rural, and we look forward to seeing you there. Now, back to that regularly scheduled episode, and enjoy that content. Thanks again.
Well, we talked about so many of your wins, and I mean, such a great launch to a career. Have you had any hiccups, anything that's kind of...
The Nashville thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was like... yeah, the Nashville thing. Yeah. It just, like, it's weird, right? Like, it wasn't... You know, I think the shortest song on my first album is like 3 minutes, and then some of them are five.
Right.
And they took all of my songs on the second album, which some of them are really long, and like they tried to compact everything into 3 minutes. And to me, the that solo's there for a reason. That extended piece there is there for a reason. The reprise is there for a reason. Mm-hmm. To me, musically, and since like I'm not trying to score a top 10 anything. I'm trying to create music that I love because I have a career. And yeah, right. Sure. If somebody picked my stuff up and I was famous, I wouldn't want to be famous. But if people, you know, if people were coming and listening to the music, that's fantastic. I mean, there's nothing like that because you feed off the audience. I mean, that's just true. But they just changed the music. Now, there was a guitar player. I don't know his name, but the guitar player that played on some of my tracks, in Nashville, this dude was sick. He was like, I would love to find that guy.
Right.
But I mean, other than that, it's just, that was probably the big thing. And, you know, I paid for it and whatever. I had the money. I mean, you know, it sucks. I was acting like I have money. I'm like, oh, I'm scrapping that project and redoing it.
Right.
But that's essentially what ends up happening. And so the bad part about that is I haven't really put out anything new music wise, other than videos and stuff, but like produced music. Mm-hmm. In a minute. And I've got this double album. I've got a whole other album ready to go. And then starting new songs for like, I don't even know, a fifth album, like, cause I'm always writing.
Right. Right. Right.
And then, so that would probably be the thing, that, you know, you have to strike when the iron's hot. Yep. And if you're pumping out the songs, you got to get it done. And then you can hold on to songs too long too.
Yeah.
Where they're
true. That's a thing.
I mean, it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can always redo them, but when you're feeling them, you put them out there, you put them on wax and you're done and you move on to the next thing. So I've got a lot of unfinished business, it feels like. So I would say that's the one thing. I mean, I have one bad experience and I've got a lot of creative stuff that I really just want to get out there. But I play it all at live shows, you know, so people can hear it, but in my head, there's something happening that I want them to hear too.
Right.
You know, and I want them to get those other layers of those other musicians exactly. that are adding. So probably that would be the one thing. It's a little bit of a delay.
It's a common thing I've heard many times that you will meet some of the best musicians and writers out there, but everything's a factory and it gets homogenized.
Yeah.
I completely have heard that so many times. So you have so much. What's the next big thing coming up for you? Is it just the album? Is there anything else coming up for you that's really big?
No, not really. I mean, just doing more shows, getting out there more, live performances. I think, you know, somebody was asking me the other day, how do you monetize on Spotify? I mean, you get like a quarter of a penny per download or whatever.
0.001. Yeah.
If Snoop Dogg's not getting like millions and millions of dollars, I'm certainly not. You know? But really it's kind of getting a handle I've tried to up my Instagram. It's really the only social media. I got a little bit on Facebook, but my social media game a little bit, get people to listen. My demographic has changed.
Right.
I'm following my demographic. It's an older demographic. It's like 30 to 65.
Right.
That's my wheelhouse. But it's gone from like 70% men to now 70% women.
Okay.
So it's just trying to do the things to gain a following and do it organically.
Makes sense.
I would love to find a booking agent. I think that they hide under rocks. I don't know if they actually exist. and just really do more live music. But when I lived in Boise and I had to move to Montana. I chose Missoula for my day job, but put another band back together, because I really do love playing out. I love playing with a guitar player and just doing some small intimate setting stuff. But I really think I've got some songs on this new album that are just like in your face, rock and roll. I don't know how to categorize it. I just call it country rock and blues. I mean, it's it's something like Southern rock ish.
Oh, how cool.
And just smoking leads, but steel guitars. I mean, you know, fiddles, mandolins, just music for people to enjoy. So hopefully putting a band back together.
That's a great one. That's a great.
Really. And then just playing more out.
Oh, it's fantastic. So the last thing I really want to touch upon is just, this is really geared what we do here towards, you know, younger musicians. And like you said, people in their later life that just are trying to get out there. Is there any kind of advice you would give to those kind of people that are looking at to get their first step or maybe take that next step in their career?
Nike.
Ooh.
Just do it.
Just do it.
I mean, go to an open mic. Mm. There's a ton of open mics.
Right.
I've only been to one open mic where there was somebody who was a jerk. Mostly everybody's so supportive. Like across the different states I've lived in, California, Idaho, Montana. I've been to a couple open mics like in Illinois.
Right.
In Illinois. and people are just like, yes, just get up there, Indiana. People are just like, get up there and do it. And they clap and whatever because they know it's there. And then they know it's their turn next. Right.
Right.
And then if you go hear live music, like if you're out eating dinner and there's a live musician, just clap.
Yeah.
Just, you know, because people are just paying attention to what they're doing, but somebody's out there probably giving you the sweating air and pouring out feelings and emotions. Just acknowledge that, I would say. But
if you can, maybe slip a couple dollars in the tip jar. I mean, $2.
Throw $2 in the tip jar. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like that. Somebody walks up and says, thank you. Mm. I don't care if it's a dollar. They throw, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it still means the world.
You know, your number on a matchbook. Whatever. I mean, whatever you're into. I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying.
Well, that's fantastic. But,
no, that's the thing. I think that you just really have to, you have to go and you have to do it. Just and practice.
That's wonderful advice. Yes.
Practice, you know? Yeah. I mean, make your fingers hurt a little bit.
Exactly. If they're calloused, maybe just a little bit more work.
A little bit more work.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, if you guys have an Instagram account, go and follow. You can see all of his, he posts all his shows he's playing on there. Follow that. Listen to the album, you know, do anything you can to give some support. And thank you so much once again. Right. Mr. Mike Johnson, thank you so much for giving us your time and your knowledge.
Oh my God, thank you. I appreciate it, brother.
Perfect. We'll see you guys on that next one. Bye.